The Christina Borgeson Show on TNT.
My guest today is Sheila Matthews, founder of Able Child, a nationally recognized nonprofit parents' rights organization. Established in 2003, dedicated to protecting full informed consent and the right to refuse psychiatric services, she's doing this to protect children, particularly. She's done a lot of work in this area, in various areas, including legislation. You know, before we get into talking about the legislation, good and for good or ill, that has been passed on all levels, state and federal, what does behavioral health mean? Is there a guidebook that says, okay, you are behaviorally healthy if you have this, 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 and this, and you are not if you have this, 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 and this, and can be, you know, given psychiatric drugs? I don't understand what behavioral health means, really.
Well, I think it was really probably focus point out to the public, you know, when they did their marketing. I think the behavioral health aspect of it is for the states to be able to have somebody, a vendor, that can oversee behavior of the population. So that's where the behavioral part comes. And it's a $1 billion industry. I mean, it is really in every aspect of our lives. So that's the name change. I think it used to be the Department of Mental Retardation. Okay, that's where behavioral health came from. You know, when I did my research, I'll give you a brief summary, is it really started with Nixon and Kennedy. Kennedy had the Department of Mental Retardation. There was a committee of people that were on it. And then it expanded through Nixon, who, you know, created the smart pill, was created under his administration. And they actually labeled the child 6 hours mentally ill during school, so they could drug the kids during school hours. So that's where
what was the smart pill? What was the smart pill?
Those were more, I believe, to try to make the kids smarter that were misbehaving. But I believe they were Dexatrin, more of a speed pill.
Yeah.
So then in 1970, I dug up some hearings that took place in the United States called Behavioral Health Drugs and School-Aged Children, and the right to privacy, because a lot of parents were speaking out, believe it or not, in the 1970s, because they didn't want their kids drugged. So this is a big thing, behavioral health, and it's been going on for years, but it came from the Department of Mental Retardation. Then it just expanded and it blew up to behavioral health.
So now what's going on in schools? Because I've spoken about this on a previous show about how my son, when he was in elementary school, I forget what grade, like maybe second grade or something, and you know, apparently he couldn't sit still in class, and you know, he wasn't violent, he didn't hit other kids or anything like that, but he couldn't sit still. And he came to school one day with a tennis ball. Teacher took the tennis ball, and he got up from his chair and went and took it out of her out of her desk. And so she calls me up and tells me she thinks he should be put on Ritalin. And I really had to tread very carefully, do a lot of talking, and we're going to work on this at home and this and that. I really had to finesse my way out of them insisting that he take this Ritalin. And I was, and that really kind of terrified me. And I realized I have a friend of mine who teaches art in high school, and she says, you have no idea the number of kids who are on these drugs. It's very pervasive. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder what the ramifications are for our society. If Bregan, you know, psychiatrist Peter Bregan is saying that these stimulants cause kids to lose their interest in socializing and in exploring and being curious, that's the fundamental, those are the fundamental elements of learning.
It's creation.
You know? Yes.
Yeah. It's creation. I mean, and that's the age they go after, because that happened to me with my son, and he was 7, second grade. And yeah, you're definitely not alone. And to think that, you know, here are these people recommending drugs to your kids in school. It's absolutely crazy. It was crazy for me then. It still is now. I mean, all the information is coming through the Association of School Psychology. People don't realize the Association of School Psychology is an independent organization that is in every school system. And that's the one that is dictating. Yeah, the association.
They're actually given office space in the schools?
Oh, absolutely. Here in the States, they are. They're in every school.
Oh, my God.
Every school, yeah. The Association of School Psychology is based in each school system. And you think, oh, wow, they're helping these kids with all these psychological problems. But really, in all honesty, it's taking away from the educational experience. You know, I could see having talk therapy when needed, very rare, and also helping your child develop and apply for colleges and that sort of thing. But these have become mental health clinics within the school, and as you know, can now start prescribing children without informed consent these psychiatric drugs. You know, so it's happening on college campuses, and parents are losing the grip of their rights for their children. For 7-year-olds, having a teacher call you up because your son takes the ball out of her desk.
Yeah, I know.
Crazy. I have the same calls. I could tell you story after story. And I was one of the only parents who did not drug my child. And my other friends who put their kids on these psych drugs were saying, Sheila, when are you going to put your son on these drugs? And I was shunned. I was blackballed. My son wasn't allowed over to play on these play dates.
It was Why? What was it that they wanted? What was it that they thought that your son could get out of being put on the drugs? What was going on with their kids? Were their kids just calmer, quieter?
Kids were all on the drugs. They were all on the drugs. So I was the outlier.
Yeah, but what changed in their kids? What did they say changed in their kids when they put them on the drugs?
They just were like, well, we don't get any more calls from the school. I remember my son went over to one woman's house, and she had called me the next day because they had gone out and played ring and run. I don't know if you remember that, where you go ring the neighbor's doorbell and then you run away and hide.
Yeah. Oh, I called that ding dong ditch.
Yes. And my son got caught, and the mother called me, and that's when she said, when are you going to put your son on these drugs? He won't do these types of things, you know? So, it's a different world, you know, it's just very sad and different world. But, you know, Able Child worked on the first law that prohibits school personnel from recommending psychiatric drugs to children as a prerequisite to go to school. So my partner, Patty, her son was 7. She listened to the school and put her son on Paxil. And then he attacked her with a knife at home. She said she didn't recognize her son anymore. And so she went to testify in Congress. And that's when I saw her. I was getting ready for my appointment at the school. And I turned on C-SPAN and I saw this mother, and she said, I don't want to put my son on psychiatric drugs. And I was like, oh my God, I got to call Congress and get her number. And I called her and I said, I'm getting ready to go to school and they're telling me I need to put my son on these drugs. And she said, Sheila, don't do it. I don't even know you, but I will help you. And so I went to the school and I said, I don't believe in ADHD and I'm not doing it. And then after I got home that day, I said, we have to help other parents. This is crazy. So we formed Able Child. And,
you know, I never, until this woman, and she shall remain unnamed because, you know, I don't want anybody coming after me, suing me or something. I don't know. But, I didn't even know this was a thing before this happened to me. I didn't even know that they could recommend drugs. And I mean, it never, ever, ever occurred to me, giving kids psychiatric drugs ever, ever. It was just something that wasn't in my headspace at all. So that was quite, it took me several months actually to get her and the school off my back. And it was kind of frightening. I was really frightened by that. And that's when I started looking into this and I realized, my God, it's a pandemic, really. Talk about a pandemic. It's or an epidemic or whatever you want to call it, of children on drugs. And I just wonder, what's going to happen to these kids as adults? I mean, their brains are still forming and they're being given these very powerful drugs.
Well, there is a Berkeley study that said that children who were on Ritalin have more likely to go on heavier drugs, that it was a gateway drug. And that was a pretty famous study called the Berkeley study. So a lot, you know, it's disturbing. I think a lot of parents are choosing to homeschool now, especially with everything that occurred here in the States with the shutdowns and lockdowns and that sort of thing.
Right.
But I do believe it still happens. And, you know, the legislation has to continue. I mean, people have to speak out. You know, people have to be involved. And we have to shut this down somehow. We have to at least get accountability from the drug companies to utilize these MedWatch reports. And the most important thing is to get it out of the school system. You know, they used to have this campaign, just say no to drugs, unless it's the ones they're pushing, right?
But I don't understand, I want to get back to this behavioral health thing, because it's just like with my son, basically she was telling me his behavioral health was anomalous and he had to be given a drug. And to me, my son was born with a ton of energy. This kid, I mean, oh my God, he was just, and some people would have looked at him and said, oh, this kid's ADHD. But I was looking at him and I was going, God, I wish I had that kind of energy. He was very curious. He wanted to run around. You couldn't nail his little butt to a chair. You know, to me, that was completely normal, you know? So what exactly is the right behavior? Is the right behavior for a 7-year-old, especially a little boy? You know, I mean, there's some girls who are born, like my daughter could sit for hours. She could read at three years old because she was so, I don't know, she would have laser focus even at that age. But my point being, When does your behavior become anomalous? When you can't sit in a chair for more than an hour at a time? What 7-year-old, what 6-year-old, what 5-year-old can? You know?
Well, I think if it wasn't such a deadly outcome, you know, if somebody wants to address your behavior in school, it's more than likely, that's probably a good thing. But when it's tied to a mental illness and devastating drugs that can impact your health, not only for the short term, but long term, that to me is like a no-win situation. Like I don't want my behavior checked that way. You know, I think behavioral health has become such a huge industry based off no science again. So yes. Like your question is right. I mean, there's just no science behind it. And behaviors change. With environments, yes. You could change your environment and your behavior will change. There's no science behind it. And I think we have to start holding them accountable to the lack of science behind it. You know, that's now, I think, really.
Well, important. Not only that, but I feel like if kids are, first of all, a lot of kids, they go home, they watch a lot of TV and they're bouncing off the walls because they're overstimulated by that. And, you know, they're heading a screen and that is not good for them. And I just feel like maybe there has to be a bigger study on what is it exactly that kids need when they go to school. Maybe they need more breaks to go outside and get their yayas out or something. You know, maybe they need to be given really good food that isn't full of preservatives so they don't jump up and down. Whatever it is. But it seems like nobody wants to look at changing a system or changing diet or changing, you know, exercise times or whatever. You know, things that just normally come to your mind that help children. You know, what every parent talks about, we're going to take him out in the yard and run him ragged so he'll sleep, you know, all these things. So, but instead we're talking about, well, you know, this kid is jumping up and down, throw a drug at him. So I guess there seems to be no interest in a more healthy, in creating a more healthy, resorting to a more healthy solution to the problem.
Well, I think the solution is to get the drugs out and then it will work itself out. There is nobody's dying from a lack of Ritalin. You know, that's, you know, I've done a lot of shows and one of the big things is they're like, you try to go into the solution like you're trying to do, right? You're like, well, what can we replace behavior and these drugs with that's acceptable? And it's like, well, we need to remove the behavioral health and we need to remove the drugs. That's the solution. Everything else will work itself out. You know, with the FDA, when I testified down there and with the other parents who were holding up posters of their children who are no longer alive because they put their kids on these psych drugs. One parent, her daughter was having anxiety regarding testing and she put her daughter on the drug and her daughter hung herself. Now she was no more, that little girl was, gosh, no more than 15 years old. She'll never walk this planet again. So to me, the solution is to take the drugs out of the school system to disrupt the distribution channel. The distribution channel needs to be disrupted. And that is the Association of School Psychology needs to be held to account of the information that's coming into the school system. As far as foster care is concerned, we need to start eliminating behavioral health vendors and bringing in dental people, bringing in diets, like all those other vendors should have a same fair share of that marketplace. instead of it all being controlled by behavioral health. That's what's controlling.
It sounds like having to take down, you know, a Pepe Escobar or Pablo Escobar drug cartel. That's what exactly it sounds what it like. Is. I mean, they're all like in there. Okay, well, we have to take a break right now, but we'll be back in a minute. This is the Christina Borgeson Show on TNT Radio Live.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Nearly every day, we hear dire predictions about climate change from the media establishment, Hollywood, and politicians. They tell us that the world is coming to an end because normal human activity is raising the temperature to dangerous levels. To avoid a hellish apocalypse, they warn us we must immediately change our lifestyles and our very way of life. But are these sensational claims based on solid empirical science? Do the facts line up with the hype? Well, an increasing number of scientists are becoming skeptical. We covered what many of these scientists had to say in our first groundbreaking film, Climate Hustle. From overhyped claims about severe weather events, temperatures, rising sea levels, and even disappearing polar bears, Climate Hustle peeled back the hype and looked at the facts, facts that simply don't add up to any reason for alarm. So this begs the questions. Why would those claiming a global warming catastrophe spread a false narrative? What would motivate them? Why would they try to hustle you? Are they trying to control the climate or you? Well, those are the questions we're going to explore in this film. And the answers may shock you. Order your DVD, Blu-ray, or digital copy today of Climate Hustle 2.
To find out more, go to climatehustle2.com.
Democracy in Action. Today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
It's Christina Borgeson back with Sheila Matthews, founder of Able Child, a nonprofit parents' rights organization established in 2003 dedicated to protecting full informed consent and the right to refuse psychiatric services. We've been talking about the abuse of psychiatric drugs, the abuse of prescribing of psychiatric drugs, and the connection of psychiatric drugs to the epidemic of kid shooters, school shooters. So, Sheila, let's talk about from the individual, what the individual parent can do to what ideas you have about systemic changes that can bring about a curbing of this crazy use of psychiatric drugs on kids.
Sure. With the parent, I think, can get informed by a couple of ways. One is finding out what behavioral health programs you have in your school and figuring out how to opt out of them. There's a great document on AbleChild.org website. It's called the Hatch Amendment, and it was named after Senator Orrin Hatch. And it's a letter you send to your school saying, I'm opting out of behavioral health programs, such as there's a lot of different new, very scary programs they have. And
Like what?
Well, they had one on suicide. So if you don't want your child learning about suicide from the school, which I don't recommend.
No, I'd opt a kid out doesn't even have yeah. that concept in its head.
Yeah, well, there's several. You'd want to find out what behavioral health programs that you have. And then the Hatch Amendment gives you the right to opt out of them. So you can send the letter and have it filed in your child's folder And then you have to be notified of the programs, and then you can opt out, and they have to make accommodations for your child in the library or something like that. I've done that for my son quite a bit when I up through. So that's one thing a parent can do. Go to Board of Ed meetings. Speak out about the drugging of children. You know, it's really important that we speak out on the drugging of foster care kids, because they don't have parents. Okay, the state is the parent. So it's a good idea to find out about off-label prescribing. If you know that one of your childhood friends, your son's friend or daughter, is on psychiatric drugs, try to, you know, maybe tell the parent about MedWatch. There's simple things that you can do where it becomes, you become neutral. It's not like you're judging the person. I have a lot of friends still who are on psych drugs. And I'm always like, you know, if you notice anything, you should fill out a med report. This gives them awareness of what's going on within their head. And also, it gives you a neutral position to care about other children and other human beings without being judgmental. So I love the MedWatch. I love the Hatch Amendment. And then as far as systemic changes, is we have to do something. People have to start speaking out against the Association of School Psychology. There is an untapped distribution center there. The information really is, legislation has to come down through the states limiting their ability to give out slanted information. You know, the information has to be fair and balanced, which should include MedWatch. If the schools are going to be recommending drugs, they should at least tell the parent how to report side effects. So that's really important. And then on the wider scope, I would love to see in each state the behavioral health committees that report directly to the governors. I'd like those dismantled. There's no reason that behavioral health vendors get special access to our governor and to our lawmakers. They have an office there that they're writing legislation. We don't have that ability as citizens to have an office up there to have direct access to the governor. We have to go through the same petitioning. So I'd like to see the behavioral health committees in each state dismantled. I'd love to have auditing done of federal grants in behavioral, federal and state grants ought to be audited and results reported publicly on any sort of drug research on children should be outlawed in foster care. I could go on and on.
No, I'm so, listen, I think people need to understand what's arrayed against them, and particularly their children. And what I don't understand, and I think it is because the taking of these antidepressants and other drugs for mental health on the part of adults has normalized it in their heads for giving to their kids, you know? So there's not, you know, why would you not say okay to something you're taking if the doctor says, or the mental health expert, that's in quotation marks, at the school says, well, your kid could use this Ritalin, you know, and you're like, well. So I guess I also think that there's a bigger wall that needs to be brought down. I mean, this is the wall where, because the other thing that normalizes it, of course, are these constant ads on TV. These constant ads on TV normalize the taking of all kinds of pills for everything. Okay? Everything. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, even if you know, if you have type 2 diabetes and you weigh 300 pounds, your doctor's going to put you on drugs. Your doctor's not going to tell you necessarily, listen, you're fat and you have to change your diet and you have to exercise, and you know, your diabetes could very well go away. They don't give that kind of advice anymore. And I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is this headspace needs to change from taking the drugs or making the drugs a normal thing to consider, as opposed to changing the environment or doing things naturally so that there's no invasive drug or you know, some cooked up patented chemical formula that is being put into your body. Again, I'm not saying that there aren't some people who need to be medicated because they're in such psychic pain or whatever, but little kids, and in the case of the foster children, she was reporting that infants right. were being given these drugs.
That's right. So one of the terms that I would like to see eliminated through society is the benefits outweigh the risks, because that's what they're using to push everything. The benefits outweigh the risk. Until we have the risks, people being honest about the risks that are associated with these drugs, then we can't have an honest discussion about it. And certainly the public school system is nowhere where they should be saying the benefits of taking a drug outweigh the risks of taking that drug, because they're not medical doctors from the get-go. And I don't think that we should have medical doctors running our school systems. So we have a lot of work to do legislatively, but I think having an open discussion about the corruption within the FDA, the behavioral health world, and our school system is a good start. You know, it's a good start. You know, foster care kids need us all, and we have to make sure that we're not experimenting on children. You know, experimenting on children in foster care it's really a human rights issue.
Before our time runs out, I do want to talk about the COVID vaccines too, because is Able Child also, I mean, I understand that, you know, you're talking about psychiatric drugs here, mm-hmm. your organization, but do you also work, because again, it's drugs being given to kids that shouldn't be given to them.
Right. Our mission is informed consent regarding psychiatric drugs. Now, we've been contacted by people throughout the country regarding the COVID vaccination issue. And what I could say about that is informed consent, that part of our mission applies to that, meaning informed consent is giving information, all the information, the good information and the risks associated. And then you are able to make an informed decision. But mandating people of any kind onto drugs is nowhere where we should be allowing our government to do to us. It's happening, you know, it doesn't, like you had said early on, you said, I wasn't even thinking about this before it happened to me.
Right.
But as people in this world, it's all happened to us. What our governments, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, every state, every country dealt with the forced drugging issue of the vaccinations. Sure, right. We all dealt with that. We were locked in our homes. We were told we couldn't work. We were told this is unacceptable. And you know what? We should turn that word, it's unacceptable behavior, for our government to treat us this way. Human beings are meant to be free. And government's supposed to be limited. We're supposed to run the government, not the other way around, you know? So, but we don't really take that issue on. I've seen a lot of I guess the terminology that they use, very similar to the behavioral health and the psychiatric drugs, and now the COVID, is the benefits outweigh the risks. That's how the FDA gets away with off-label prescribing. And how they get away with this COVID stuff is they're saying
what
the benefits...
What proof do they provide of that, actually?
They don't. They haven't supplied me enough proof personally to make that... I've made an informed decision regarding my life and what I want to do in it. And, you know, I've heard some quite sad stories about what the government's doing in relations to people's private choices, you know, not only here in the United States, but around the world.
We
don't treat human beings this way. It's a human rights issue, but it's not Abel Child's issue. We have enough trouble protecting children, you know, from psychiatric drugs.
Yeah, but it's weird because I don't feel like there's a question in the society being raised. Even these school shooter things don't raise this question, which is, what's wrong with our society that we have so many kids on drugs and on psychiatric drugs, and we have this epidemic? And it's weird. Yeah. It's almost and what's bizarre, what's really bizarre to me, is it's the opposite reaction, which is give more drugs to these kids. It's just it's like I feel like I'm in some kind of Alice in Wonderland box or something thinking about this.
Well, I could say it's not us. It's not society that is causing the ill. It's not society. It's the governments.
And the industries that are selling these drugs. I mean, it's a money-making operation, right?
Right. It all comes down to money, and it all comes down to product. I guess don't realize that behavioral health is products, which is the drug, and services, which is the going to the psychiatrist, you know. So it's products and services. And this is a marketplace. We want to be able to trade within the United States, and we want to be able to trade with different countries. And if you just look at what's happening in the world, we see that there's a breakdown of commerce. There's a breakdown of trade. There's a breakdown of communication. So it's like there's no balance right now. So I don't think it's society isn't screwed up. It's the industries that have too much power over the people. I truly believe that man is good, that people are good. Humanity is good. I mean, we're all born, you know, sinners in a lot of ways, but I think we're good. People are not born.
Yeah, but why is it that you and I, when we were confronted with this situation, we both said, no, we're not going to put our kids on drugs. Why is it that so many other people make the opposite? I think that's my point. You know, it's unfathomable to me that a parent would see that as a viable option for their kid jumping up and down in school. I'm saying it's a society problem because what is it? You can't, I don't know. Go ahead.
It's coercion. It's coercion. See, it's the same thing with COVID, right? So like my son just got married. So imagine, you know, somebody saying you can't go to the wedding unless you get a COVID shot, or your family unit is saying, I just gave birth, and guess what, grandma, you're not going to come to my house unless you get a vaccination. That's coercion. Okay. So you make a choice based on, gee, I want to see my grandchildren. I want to see my son's wedding. And then the same thing with you and me in school, you said you were frightened. So it's fear-based. So it's like, okay, I'm in school and they're telling me to drug my son. Well, guess what? Your son can't come back to school unless he's on psychiatric drugs. Well, I'm more likely to put my son on psychiatric drugs if I'm being coerced to do it. See, we're anti-coercion, our organization. Coercion is the worst thing you could do in society. So it's not society's problem. It's what's happening to society. I hate blaming each other. I hate blaming, like, people that come to Able Child and they have their kids on drugs. And I'm like, I want them to come. I don't, like, when I see people that have vaccinated themselves and they're now injured, vaccinated injuries are going on, and my heart breaks. So I don't think
I'm not trying to play a blame game. I'm trying to say something's awry generally. That's these super powerful industries, you know, have come together with government to coerce on such a so pervasively and so powerfully to create the situation that we're in. We have to take a break right now. We'll be right back in 1 minute. This is the Christina Borgeson Show on TNT Radio Live.
What happened to equity? Poor families with smart meters will now be paid not to use electricity to reduce the risk of blackouts. Yes, you heard that right.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
In England, the company responsible for keeping the lights on is working to establish a scheme to pay consumers with smart meters to ration their energy usage voluntarily. The company claims it believes this could be a cheaper and greener option than paying fossil fuel power plants to generate more electricity. So it has come to this. Our elite leaders in large corporations who fly around in private jets are now paying poor people not to use energy instead of allowing more energy production. This is the world of a Green New Deal on steroids, a world which we must reject. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Eggs. You can fry them, scramble them, poach them, boil them, or race them on a spoon. But uncooked eggs can be a risk for food poisoning. To be safe, avoid buying dirty or cracked eggs. Always wash your hands after handling eggs. And if you're concerned, pregnant, elderly, or have a poor immune system, make sure you cook eggs until the yolk starts to firm. Or look for new pasteurized eggs. For excellent eggs, handle them safely.
News more twisted than soap operas and with worse actors. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It's Christina Borgeson. I'm here with Sheila Matthews, founder of Able Child, a nationally recognized nonprofit parents' rights organization established to protect full informed consent and the right to refuse psychiatric services. We've been talking about this massive drugging of children, and especially the abuse of psychiatric drugs, prescribing psychiatric drugs with foster children. And I want to get back to legislation. I want to talk about what legislation has been passed in what states, or what federal legislation that has been passed that is actually good. Recently. Can you think of any?
Well, I know that I worked on the No Child Left Behind Act, which had the prohibition for mandatory medication. And that is the law of the land here in the United States. So it prohibits a school from denying your child education if you don't place your child on psych drugs. I think that was landmark. And I'm really proud of the work. And then recently, I worked on a piece of legislation in Connecticut, which I hope to get back to on a national, and that's the 1-800-MEDWATCH number going on the containers of the your prescription. So right. when you get your prescription, it would say if you have a side effect, call 1-800-MEDWATCH. So that was passed in the state of Connecticut on generic drugs, though it should be on all drugs. And so that's the legislation I've been working on. And so I have to get back to doing that. And then federally would love to see more legislation regarding auditing of mental health programs throughout the country. Right. I would love to see, I totally agree with you regarding advertising drugs on TV. That I think that's going to be a hard bell to unring.
Right.
But I
boy, love to that see. Would be a powerful one to achieve.
I mean,
it really would make a big difference, I think. Let's talk about this Baker Act. Now, is that only in Florida?
It's called the Baker Act in Florida, but there are some different terminologies in other states. So that's okay. where you get the 48-hour hold on somebody who becomes a harm to themselves or to somebody else. And that's happened to a couple of the school shooters. They were Baker Act before a school shooting and then released and then went on to shoot up a school. I can't remember exactly which ones. But the Baker Act, that's doesn't work. You know, a psychiatric hold on somebody, you know, it's, again, hard to determine whether somebody's a threat to themselves or to other people, and how long does that threat last? That's unconstitutional. You know, that doesn't make sense to me.
Now, you had mentioned earlier, I wanted you to give me more details about that because that was pretty interesting. You were talking about how at this one school, they had a rash of suicides.
In Pennsylvania.
What was that about? What drug was that?
I'm not sure what drug it was, but what happened was one of the students committed suicide. And then what happened was the grief counselors went in and must have placed more of these children on the psychiatric drugs in the aftermath of them losing their classmate. And it became a rash of suicides. And it was a cluster of suicides in the state of Pennsylvania. I wrote about it several years ago. But that was never investigated properly because, again, if you're giving these same drugs to all these young children and they're killing themselves, that to me is something the MedWatch would have been very effective in picking up that cluster, you know.
Right.
It should be mandatory to do, there are mandatory reporters for MedWatch, but MedWatch should be a household thing. It should be, everybody should know about MedWatch. Not 1%, 99% of people should know what it is, because that's how we regulate the drug companies, you know. So, you know, that's the important thing. More people die from pharmaceutical products than gun injuries.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So the pharmaceutical, you know, I'd love to see legislation like that. I just, MedWatch is critical to public safety. And the pharmaceutical companies know what MedWatch is. They know that they're required to adhere to it. But they're glad the population doesn't know about it. Trust me, they are thrilled that they don't know about it.
Wow.
So that's
not a good thing.
No, it isn't, because that's what regulates their products. So, you know, I would love to see legislation that mandates the population know about it in any way we can. You know, that's important for humanity.
Yeah, they could put it on those ads. They could put it on those TV ads. Because they go, oh, side effects are blah, 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 and they speak in triple time, and they should say, call MedWatch if you take this pill and, you know, I have a side effect. The other thing, we don't have much time left, but last month you wrote an article on mental health records mattering in mass shootings. Don't you think there should be some kind of legislation that makes the mental health records publicly available when these kids do this? I mean,
absolutely, 100%. They should be released within 48 hours, especially if you're going to start to legislate within 48 hours. You can't legislate without those records. And the public has a right to know. So, I would love to see legislation on that,
Has anybody ever done a study? Has anybody ever done a study that has actually looked in detail at every one of these school shooters in terms of their backgrounds, in terms of everything that they could possibly gather about them? And including what drugs they took, et cetera, to see what else, what other commonalities there were. Because one of the things that's interesting is they seem to be from all different walks of life. Okay, so that's...
I know that the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, CCHR, I use a lot of their material because I think it is most extensive material. Hear me?
Yeah, you faded out for me. Yeah, CCHR. Tell people what that is. It is connected to the Scientologists, and a lot of people, of course, have problems with Scientology. But CCHR, I've seen their research on psychiatric drugs, and it is good. I mean, these people, it's top notch. You may not like the Church of Scientology. You may think that they're a cult or whatever. And certainly that series that was done by that actress, that TV actress, I forget her name right now, certainly gave everybody pause. But their arm that does this research on psychiatric drugs does top-notch work. Top-notch.
I think so.
So I just want to say that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not a Scientologist, though I respect...
I know you're not.
I respect the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. I've been a recipient of two human rights awards from their organization. And, you asked a very valid question. Has anybody ever done some substantial investigation into each shooter, and they have. So you like you said, you can't deny them their thoroughness. So I would highly recommend, and they're separate from the church. It's like Catholic Charities. It's separate from, I highly recommend taking a look at their information.
They've done some great documentaries. Yeah, they've done some great documentaries on the history of psychiatric drugs, and I know. So what do you know the contents of did they assess and analyze and come up with commonalities besides they're all on psychiatric drugs?
They were in diversion programs. I would say that was another big common thread. Was they were in mental health programs, as like we talked about. Remember the Hatch Amendment, you can put in your son or daughter's file. Those children participated in mental health programs within the public education system. So those were the two common factors. One was being a participant in a mental health program, and the other one was being on psychiatric drugs. And but they did come from all sorts of different backgrounds.
Well, what's interesting about the diversion, that sort of raises a question about the diversion programs, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Well, I got to tell you that this has been a very enlightening 2 hours. I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I think everybody should appreciate the work that you're doing. Let people know where they can see your stuff.
Sure. www.ablechild.org. We're friends with everyone, and we would love your support, and we would love for you to come visit our website. We usually respond to any inquiries pretty quickly, and we're here to help. And thank you so much for having me on your program. The courage you have is amazing, and I really, really appreciate it. It is people like you that make my job a lot easier. So I'm really appreciative of you.